to the Transform Network Roundtable, where we're gathering together to explore what it means to engage God's mission. I'm your host, Jonathan Brink, and I'm so excited to bring you this first roundtable. Today, we have a robust dialogue with several practitioners in the missional community. With me are Don and Pam Heatley of Vision Community Church in Warwick, New York, Kathy Escobar from The Refuge in Denver, Colorado, and Phil and Stephanie Shepherd from the U Catastrophe in Fort Worth, Texas. In this first roundtable, we're going to be exploring what missional means. So many people are beginning to discover that God is actually engaged in a mission. We're now asking what it means to form communities that are mission-driven or missional. We're beginning to understand that it's not just a buzzword, but something deeply embedded in the way of Jesus. We're also going to be exploring what missional means to each of us and what that looks like in our present context. What does it mean to engage a missional mindset in our neighborhoods and the world around us? Finally, we're going to be exploring and even wrestling with a stereotype that missional is just about social justice and not much else. We created this podcast out of the Transform Network, which exists to help form and create conversations exactly like this. We want to bring people together who want to take the risk to form new communities engaged with a missional mindset. This roundtable is a precursor to the first Transform Network gathering, April 30th to May 2nd, 2010. The first gathering will include Brian McLaren, Peter Rollins, Kathy Escobar, Anthony Smith, Tim Conder, and so many more amazing voices. It's a free event, but you must register on the Transform Network website, which is www.transformnetwork.ning.com. So please register now if you can. So let's get to the conversation. So I want to welcome everybody to the first Transform Network Roundtable. And our conversation today is really around the word missional and what it means and how it plays out in our context and really what are some of the stereotypes. With me today is Don and Pam Heatley from Vision Community Church in Warwick, New York. Don and Pam, welcome.
Well, thanks for having us.
Hi. Hi, thanks for having us.
Give us a very quick introduction to your community there in New York.
Well, Vision Community Church began about 8 years ago, interestingly, on the Sunday after September 11th is when we launched it. And we used to meet in a community center, and in the past 6 months, we've actually relocated to an old 150-year-old building that was a Presbyterian church that closed recently. So we're now living into what it means to be in a place permanently 7 days a week and how to be a missional community in that sense. We do a variety of things in worship and in our ministries, which Pam could probably add to.
Yeah, we worship, well, up until a few months ago, we worshiped in the round. We do interactive elements in our worship, and we hope to be getting back to that soon when we take out the pews of our new facility. And we have a lot of ways for people to connect into the community through groups, through art shows, through speaker series, music nights, and we have a pretty active youth ministry and a very successful children's ministry. I have to say it's gone really well. So we have a lot of things going on. So we're juggling a lot of stuff and still trying to get an idea of what it means to be in community together and active and doing all this stuff here in New York.
So also joining us is Phil and Stephanie from the U Catastrophe. Welcome.
Thank you for having us.
So why don't you tell us a little bit about your community to start with?
Well, the UCE, which is short for the UCE Catastrophe, which is the essential opposite of catastrophe. It's instead of a sudden change of things going from good to bad, it's the sudden change of things going from bad to good. And that's the context of where the word came from. It was Tolkien who coined the word. And when we felt drawn to start this community in Fort Worth, Texas, that was the center of what we wanted to be, this holistic community of people, everyday people journeying together.
Yeah, we started the UCE in September of 2007, and we We based our community out of downtown Fort Worth, and we recently, too, have just started meeting in a more permanent space in the last probably even 3 months. And so we're also trying to figure out what does it mean to be a missional, you know, community in downtown Fort Worth. What does it mean to be a faith community that not only functions in the 21st century, but also then 21st century in downtown Fort Worth? So those are things that we're dealing with as well. We also, too, meet in the round. We try to have a very interactive worship gathering. Anything from, you know, we share a meal together. Our worship gatherings are like 3 hours long. So, yeah, it's we share a meal together as an act of worship. We also do some contemplative prayer, some music, and then a teaching discussion time. So,
Kathy, you're from The Refuge. Why don't you give us an introduction?
It's always so fun hearing what other people are doing. The Refuge, we're kind of in between in terms of timeline because we're coming on our four-year anniversary of starting. And I always describe The Refuge as a really eclectic faith community where there's just a lot of people on the margins of life and faith, a wide breadth of ages from, you know, 19 to 60-something, kind of all mixed together. And probably the common theme why most people are there is that they are somehow on the margins. So somehow life got hard, somehow money is really tight, somehow there's a struggle, somehow they don't fit in to some kind of traditional church context, a wide variety, sometimes no belief at all, really, but a deep desire to be with people. And so it's a really crazy group. It's a really crazy group. That's what I love about it. Being kind of like the other two communities, very interactive, lots of dialogue. We never have a static gathering. There's always lots of interaction, experiential stuff. We have quite a few artists and try and kind of press that out as much as we can, give people a voice that don't usually have a voice. So the floor is always open. You never know what you're going to get. Lots of eating together. And really, I would say the kind of the core value for us is really community and really learning what it means to love God, love people, love ourselves, and be loved by God, by people, and ourselves. And that gets kind of all mixed up in our life together. So we're having a lot of fun, but it's been a crazy journey too because of the diversity in our community. Sometimes it's a little on the tricky side to pull it all together.
So my name is Jonathan, and I'm actually with it's a process called Thrive Ministries. We actually are sort of experimenting. We've been gathering together for about 7 years, and it was birthed out of a church trying to ask the question, what do missional communities look like? And what we sort of centered on was the Jesus model of what would it look like to gather 12 people together and live life together for 3 years. That was really the basis. It took us probably about 7 years to come up with a sense of what we were actually doing and what was a sense of the root problems we were solving in missional community and how could we? What does gathering actually look like? What does it mean to look like? What does it look like to live into the reality of grace, but also live into the truth of that, and what does it mean to be restored? So we spent a lot of time over the last 7 years really living very small. Our intent was not to actually grow in the number sense, but to explore the reality of what Jesus was actually trying to do when he picked 12 people. So that was that's really been our journey, and now we're beginning to grow. We have sort of little cell plants all over the United States that are beginning to explore this same construct together. So with that, I want to move into our first question, and Kathy, I'm going to begin with you, and the question is, what drew you to this missional conversation? Because it's sort of a new word, but from hearing you and knowing you, it's something that you guys have already been living into. What is that? What drew you to that?
Well, it is really interesting how it is kind of a new word. It's not a word that I ever really used through the years, but it's always a word, you know, now knowing what I know about it, that was always deep in my heart and in the practice. I would say that for us, you know, I've been wrestling with this whole tension between church in our head and really Church of Action and Authenticity for a really long time. It's gotten me in a little bit of trouble over the years. And I think what drew me to the conversation really is a group of people that I had no idea who they were, you know, out in blog land, really putting language to what I always believed. And we were always trying in smaller pockets. So in the churches that I've been in over the years, we were always kind of trying to do it, but it was always kind of against the grain of the wider community. And I think as I started reading and started talking to people, meeting people, engaging in so many of these conversations about, you know, 5 years ago, maybe a little bit less than that, kind of right as we were planting the refuge and starting to dream about what could be possible, it really caught fire. And it's been so fun to kind of see so many people know that there's something to the hands and feet and heart, eyes and ears of Jesus really in action, not just in words, not just talking, not just sitting and listening, but actually moving and engaging and what that means. So it was really like a magnet thing. I was really deep. All of a sudden, I just kept leaning more and more and more, more towards the conversation. And now find that whenever the pieces that I read or the stories that I hear, just these conversations right now are really encouraging to me because they remind me that people are really dedicated to living out the ways of Jesus in their context.
Don and Pam, how about you? What drew you to the missional conversation?
I would agree actually with what Kathy said before. I wasn't even familiar there was such a thing before we became a part of it. For us, it was a sense of wanting to start a new faith community and seeing this model that we saw a lot in the Northeast where it may be built around a particular ethnic subculture that changes in the neighborhood. So an existing church would start another service in that language using people that were indigenous to that culture to create it. And what we saw were a lot of churches that were trying to reach the culture outside of the church. But rather than being indigenous to it, it seemed like many of them were using it as a technique, as a bait and switch type of technique, where it was like, we're going to pretend we're into rock music so that you will come here, or pretend we're into drama to make it attractional. Whereas, you know, I played in bands in college, and I also was a filmmaker, and Pam was from a theater background, so it was just indigenous to who we were. So it was kind of, as followers of Jesus, you know, how do we do that, being indigenous to who we were? Because the culture we thought that was outside the church was even more different than an ethnic community's culture was from a white American culture inside the church. That there was this even bigger gap, and we really identified more with people outside of the church than inside. So for us, missional was just kind of growing that mission. I think it was the same for Pam too.
You know, like everyone has said before, I wasn't really aware that there was a thing called a missional conversation. But I guess through the years, I've sort of found myself involved in it. And I think it's from sort of a dissatisfaction with what I've had always experienced in my church life, which, you know, it seemed very static and very spectator. So what we set out to do at Vision was just to create a place where we could explore and we could participate in worship, and we could participate fully in the activities that were available and in the ministries that were available, and that and even to set up our church in a way that anyone could bring any mission forward, and we would find a way, no matter how big or small it was, to, as a community, to try to fulfill that person's dream in their life, or that dream for God in their life. And it's been a blessing and a challenge, but it took away that spectator idea of what church was.
Phil and Stephanie, how about you?
I can definitely tie in with Pam
It was definitely a personal deconstruction of my own faith, vocation, and calling. In the late 90s, I ended up as an unlikely seminary student in Vancouver, Canada. And there in my own painful process of deconstructing the tenets of my faith, I tore down these unhealthy structures that lacked honesty, that lacked a holistic view of life, which I was particularly interested in because my background was the arts, was theater and literature and writing, and having a holistic view of life, eating, hospitality, being. I stumbled into this Trinitarian emphasis of Karl Barth and shifting beyond the ecclesiocentrism and the individualism and putting this emphasis on God's mission rather than ours, that we participate with the triune God and what the Creator is doing. And my personal reconstruction involved me searching for words that describe the idea of my more holistic faith. And missional was one of those key words that spoke into my heart of what I was trying to describe as an honest, holistic faith.
Yeah, you know, this was a loaded question for me because I grew up Southern Baptist in Anchorage, Alaska, and I had a pretty bad identity crisis. Southern Baptist in Alaska, it just doesn't quite work so well. And, you know, being in Alaska, I ended up being the missional target of other people from the what we call the lower 48, everybody else in the rest of the continental United States. And I just remember feeling almost jaded, if you will, because I felt like this person entered into my life and, you know, wanted to help our faith community that we were a part of, and then they would go away. And it was almost like an emotional, abusive relationship, if you will. And so I remember being on staff at a church in Anchorage, one of my first paying gig staffs, I guess, if that's what you want to call it, and it was a Christ Community Church in Anchorage. And we, when we got on staff, we decided, you know, we pretty much hated everything that we were doing, and we had, you know, a community that was only like 150, 200 people, and we had 26 programs, and we decided that was ridiculous. So we killed everything, and we said we want to know what it means not only to be a faith community in Anchorage that's healthy, and but we want to know what it means to be, you know, love the people that are, surround us. And so one of the things that we all had talked about, because we had all felt like, you know, this target, that how do we not treat other people that way? How do we find out in our local context, how do we invest people, how do we love them as we love the Creator? We wrestled with this conversation. Missional meant investing into our local context, and that's what drew me to it, is I wanted to know how could I love the people that I live next door to.
What's interesting is that I'm listening to all the conversations so far. We engaged we began really from a very similar sense of dissatisfaction. My community actually burst out of a weekend conference where a group of men gathered together and recognized we were broken, but we were all very intelligent, professional men who we're kind of sick and tired of just simply learning, sitting in the pews and learning the right answer. And we all kind of sat around and said, there's got to be something more holistic than this. And so we gathered together and said, okay, let's not figure out what does it mean to engage the right answer someone's giving us, but what does it mean to actually live in the footsteps of Jesus? And for us, 7 years ago, that was a radical departure from our traditional structures, but it really began out of sort of a contextual dissatisfaction of what we were currently engaging on a one-day-a-week process on Sundays for 2.5 hours was leaving us almost stunted, and we wanted more. And then when we discovered the word missional, it was like a breath of fresh air because it gave us a sense that, okay, God is already doing something. We didn't have to figure it out. We could then partner, we could participate with God in what God is already doing. And that was, it kind of opened up our context a lot for saying, okay, we're on the right track here. It's not just about learning the right answer, but about engaging a way of life. And that was really our huge transition. I want to open this up now to a group response. How does that sense of dissatisfaction resonate with all of us?
Well, I think that was definitely the powerful force for me. And as I hear you guys all talking, it sounds like it's the same. There was something that just didn't sit right, even though I was spending a lot of time in that system. And the dissatisfaction pretty soon, you know, just gets so stirred up. It's like, I just can't do this anymore. I have to do something different.
Yeah, for me, I grew up in a very conservative Calvinist background. And for me, it was always articulated in, since the denomination I grew up in had a relationship with South Africa, I remember in the 70s, the preacher getting up and saying, well, you know, at the latest, you know, denominational meeting, they passed a resolution against apartheid in South Africa. And then he said, what in the world do we have to do with South Africa? Our job is to preach the gospel. And I was probably about 17 years old, and it struck me, there's something really wrong with that statement. And so for me, that kind of pushed me, like, well, what is the gospel? Is it more than just talking about where we go after we die?
Yeah, we encountered the exact same thing in the fact that it felt like what we were doing was becoming very rote. We were sitting in, and our community was actually fairly vibrant at the time, but it was almost becoming repetitious, that it wasn't impacting our present-day realities very much. It was like we were following a routine, hearing the sermon, and I love my pastor. And it wasn't a sense of that he was doing anything wrong, per se, intentionally. It was just a sense of there had to be more that God was doing, that it couldn't be just this sense of let's show up on Sunday and hear the right answer, and hopefully, you know, it had to live in a much smaller community than that. We wanted something that was more present reality, where it could speak into each of our lives and in community. And Kathy, you and I have actually talked a lot about this, of what does it mean to have a community that wrestles with our brokenness in a sense of grace at a very deep level. And we don't have a lot of context for doing that. We don't have a lot of space to really wrestle through all of our brokenness without feeling a deep sense of shame and a deep sense
of... Oh, it's so true. And I remember way back when, I mean, this is really, I started my journey kind of out, even though I was in for a long time, about 16 years ago when I was pregnant with my daughter. And I remember the church that we were at basically pulling us aside. That group ended up getting kicked out of our church because it was too much focus on authenticity and brokenness and wrestling with our experience with God and not enough Bible. And yet, when I look back on that group of people, the transformation that happened in that season, I mean, it changed everybody's life forever. But it came at this cost of kind of not fitting in with the system. And yet everyone there would say that it was probably one of the most healing, powerful, launching experiences of their spiritual journey.
I would agree completely with that. I think authenticity is contagious, yet at the same time, that also means that we have to invest into one another. And that becomes really messy. Mm-hmm. You know, I think, Don, you said that it was your pastor that said, well, what does this have? What do we have to do with Africa? Well, you know, when you start being authentic and you start having to ask those questions, and that means you have to not only invest in each other, but you need to. This becomes a larger conversation, and we start to have to investing into things like, I don't know, like Haiti and things like the apartheid back in the 70s and, you know, the stuff that's going on in Uganda with the children slaves and things like this. We start having to ask broader questions, and it makes us stop having to be lazy because, you know, I don't know if you all are familiar with the song Fake Plastic Trees by Radiohead, but every time I have this conversation, I think about this song. And the reason is because it seems like whether we're Baptist, we're born Presbyterian, or whether we just grew up in a faith that was so closed off and being authentic, it doesn't matter what label you put on it. it seems like we were taught not to be authentic, we were taught not to invest, and that we were taught to be uniformed in our answers. And what drew me to missional ideas and conversations is the investment in authenticity and asking those hard questions and not being afraid to do that.
So that's really a great segue for us in terms of going to our next question, which is, Kathy, I'll begin with you. What does missional mean to you, and what does it look like in your present context?
Well, I think for me, you know, I use the word missional and incarnational kind of interchangeable. I think I kind of like incarnational better, just a teeny bit. And I think the reason why is just that to me, that was always the idea that Jesus was in the flesh. He moved into the neighborhood, and then he calls us to do the same thing, to not be safe and protected behind religious systems. I mean, that was what he was railing against. But to break through all of that and go down, basically. His message was a message of downward mobility. And that's very contrary to kind of most of my church experiences, which were really about kind of pulling it together and moving up. So that kind of countercultural piece of Jesus's message to me is what missional means. It means going down. And that's hard. My human nature doesn't want to go down. You know, all those things of kind of where you're supposed to be and what you're supposed to be like when you're 40 years old and have kids and two jobs and those kinds of things are very contrary to the ways of the kingdom. And so in our context, what's very interesting is that nobody on the whole, I shouldn't say nobody, but most everybody in our community does not know what the word missional means. No one's using it. No one's tossing it around. It's kind of the same thing with emerging. They're not terms that anyone really cares about. I think what they're caring about is, where's God in all of this? Where's the hope? Where's the love? And where's the help? And so that's kind of what it looks like in our context, is we're really dedicated to being mixed up in the messy and dark places of all kinds of people's lives. You don't have to be in our community to be part of that. We go out a lot in different ways, and most all of it just really comes from relationship. We have a few intentional things that we do, some different ministries that we really pour into and partner with as, you know, kind of brother and sister ministries. There's a group in Denver that has transitional housing, and we really love them and try and be down there as much as we can. But on the whole, it's like creating a culture of authenticity, like Phil shared, and of what it really means to be in the trenches of real life with each other. What does it mean to love sacrificially? What does it mean to rub against the really irritating, hard places of people? And so in our context, that's kind of what it looks like. It's hard because we have this diverse group of single mommies and educated people and uneducated people and people who struggle with mental illness and chronic illness and living paycheck to paycheck and kind of everything in between. What it really looks like is trying to figure out how to learn how to love each other. And it's contagious because people in our community then are going out into the places that they live and they work and they hang out and kind of passing it on. They're kind of passing on hope. And none of it is programmed, really. We don't have any additional programs. It's just kind of doing it. So that's what it looks like for us.
Dawn and Pam, how about you?
I would say we have a similar experience. If you were to walk into our church on a Sunday morning, I always describe it as incredibly chaotic. It doesn't look well thought out or planned, although, you know, at times it is, but it's a very chaotic and a communal experience. People are talking, it's really a meeting place of the community when we begin our service. It's really not like a static experience. And I really like what you touched on about culture, because for me, I grew up, I did not come from a religious family and had no church background, although my parents did send me to Catholic school because that was the best school in the area. So I did study a lot about Jesus, and so a lot of my journey was solo until, as an adult, young adult, I looked to join churches. And I was actually surprised at what I encountered in churches, because it was so different than what I expected. And it seemed to mirror the culture more than I expected it to. And I think one of the things that we try to do at Vision is to try to intentionally be countercultural. And it's hard, because people are ingrained to have that get ahead nature instead of the, you know, get together nature, like to be with one another rather than to succeed or to be the leader of this ministry or to bring those cultural things into the church. And as someone looking for a church, those were the things I was looking for. So there are many people, I believe, that are looking for that, and they've never been to a church and are surprised at what they encounter in church. Or they've been to many churches and are looking for something different. And I think community is at the key of what people are looking for, and authentic relationships, and how do we live together in a copacetic way. It's that's been the biggest challenge, because we had a lot of growth early on, and I attribute that to people looking for something different. But, you know, when you have a lot of different people interacting and wanting to be in community together, there's a lot of challenges to that. But that's part of the process, too. So that's missional to me. I think that is a missional vocation, going out there and trying to reclaim community, because I think in our day, community isn't what it once was.
I'd say for me on that end, I think missional, I think, okay, well, what's our church's mission? I mean, when we began Vision, we went to a little course on church planting, and they always said, have a mission statement for your church. And ours, the short version of it, is to make disciples of Jesus Christ, or to form disciples of Jesus Christ. So if that's the mission, then it's kind of okay. It's about forming disciples or followers of Jesus, but it's also about not just saying, okay, you've crossed a line, now you are now in the club, you are now a disciple, but what, now you have to do it. And now we have to do it together, and we're doing it together as a community and with our surrounding community. I think the more, what I've always found interesting is, when we began Vision, since I was from a filmmaking background, other churches would always pay attention to us, oh, you're the church with video. And in all the years, the feedback I get from people, whether it's email or online, about what they enjoy about our community, it's never where do they feel God in our community? It's never, oh, I like the videos, or I like the songs, or the band. It always has to do with this radical hospitality, with feeling welcome, not just on Sunday morning, but at any event, us being out in the community and showing hospitality to people, being part of our community. The fact that people from Vision you see in other walks of life in the town and in other events. It's not like we only do our events within the church, but everybody, you know, is very well connected with the surrounding town as well. So to me, that's a big part of what being missional is, and how it looks to us where we are.
Phil and Stephanie, how about you?
What does missional mean to us, and what does missional look like in our present context? And I like the introduction and the inclusion, as Kathy said, of the word incarnational. To us, the missional church, the incarnational way, is intentionally being indigenous faith communities, willing and ready to be Christ people in their own situation and place, believing that God is already present in the culture where it finds itself. And so thus the missional church doesn't view its purpose as bringing God into the culture or taking individuals out of the culture into this sacred place. They are all involved investigating and learning the way of Jesus and being messy community together, being hospitable, welcoming the stranger, not viewing them as a threat. It's replacing the come to us invitations with a go to them living life, living in word and deed. in the word of Jesus and the acts of Jesus, the hearing and doing, word and communion, the gospel embodied in our community and service is as important as what we say. And so for us, we seek to be intentionally indigenous and present to the culture where we find ourselves, which is downtown Fort Worth, in the midst of a Texas Baptist culture, which is ripe with fallouts from the Baptist tradition, where people have been marginalized and rejected and even spiritually abused. Some of the worst stories of people's being essentially abused by the church have come to us from Texas, and it breaks our hearts. And so we're open to being messy, being chaotic, being community on this journey together where no one is greater than another. And we start, for example, our Sunday night gatherings in that spirit of welcoming and belonging amid a very public atmosphere, essentially in a circle where we gather with a meal. We start with a meal. It's not separate from our worship. The meal is part of our worship, where we gather around tables and we sit and we face one another and we face the beautiful chaos of sharing life together. We don't have a sermon. We have more of a guided conversation where all voices are welcome. We incorporate various historical practices of the church because at various points in time in our long history, we've overemphasized either the heart or the mind or the soul then to the exclusion of one or the other. And so we're seeking to love the Creator, love the creation, and embrace beauty that's present in everyone and in places and ways that we wouldn't think or imagine.
Yeah, I mean, Steph summed up most of my thoughts. I would say, to simplify just for me, is that, you know, missional looks like to me is life. You know, Jesus called us into a life of loving the Creator and loving the creation. That's including, you know, our neighbor and ourselves and the rest of creation and embracing beauty. And to me, that is a rhythm of life that exudes out of what we do. You know, so one of the questions is, so what does that look like in our present context as the catastrophe? You know, for our present context, we've tried to invest into one another's lives, and we've tried to love each other right where we're at, and sometimes we're good at it, and sometimes we're not. I mean, I'm not going to say that we're perfect at this, but it's the journey of trying to do that, and that's living out that life with one another, exfoliating the kingdom of God as we go. But, you know, take for instance, like our, in the city of Fort Worth, human trafficking has become a big issue that not a lot of people know about. But because of the folks who are in our community have been affected by it, we've got a couple of folks that their friends, one of their friends was abducted, and, you know, a horrible, horrible story, you know. She was sold into prostitution, and she ended up dying, and it's just been an ugly, ugly situation. And with us walking as a community with these folks through their grief, it's come to our palette as a community to help bring exposure within the greater Fort Worth area. This is a problem, you know. So how do we address that? And so that's what we've done as a community and continue to do that as we've learned to love the Creator and love each other and love ourselves. These issues start surfacing, and it just becomes a natural part of our life to be in discussion and create action out of that discussion.
You talk a lot about working in your communities, and I think that's one of the things that really drew us to what God was doing, Kathy, you talked about meeting people where they're at and incarnating in Jesus in that moment. I think one of the things that we really explored was Jesus constantly led people to the cross. And in other words, the way we translated that was is that Jesus said, go to where there is suffering. In other words, somebody said countercultural. I think, Pam, it was you who said countercultural. The countercultural approach is to move towards death, whereas the cultural move is to move away from death, to preserve life. And Jesus kind of turned that on its ear. And so what we kind of said is, okay, what does it mean to gather together in a tribe and engage each other's suffering, and to go into suffering not for the sake of engaging more suffering, but to transcend it? And that was really the space of what we were trying to create. And we said, okay, we need people. A lot of people ask, okay, are you a support group? And we said, well, people need support groups. We're not, you know, trying to strictly be a support group. But people need support, because the reality is that in the midst of suffering, we ask, okay, God, where are you? And we need people around us supporting us through the space of suffering so that we can reach Sunday, so that we can move past to say, okay, this suffering doesn't define me. And that what Jesus is actually calling us to is to engage suffering for the sake of transcending it. And that was what and I think, Kathy, that looks like incarnation in community, is where we're willing to sit with the reality that someone just committed adultery, or a wife just left, or I just lost my job and I'm going to lose my house. I mean, those are suffering. Those are very real suffering situations. Or like Philly said, somebody's neighbor just got abducted. You know, those are spaces of suffering that seem to say God is not present. And that to incarnate Jesus is to move into those spaces and say, no, God is still here. And one of the things we found is I needed that space. I needed those people around me reminding me that God is present in the midst of my suffering. Because I'm a leader, and I still need, you know, I'm in trying to incarnate Jesus, I still need people around me reminding me that God is here. And so that was really the intent of how it worked out in our present context of, what if we gathered together a group of 12 people who are willing to incarnate Jesus together in the midst of our suffering and really live that out, even in the midst of conflict? Because we had to develop some very serious protocols for conflict. How do you resolve where in the midst of your tribe, life is not happening and there's deep conflict, and to move into that suffering and resolve it? And that's what love really looked like for us. So I want to open up the floor a little bit and say, how does that chaos resonate with you guys? Because it seems like what missional is calling us all to is going into the chaos.
I think a lot of it has to do with, like you said, meeting people where they are, both, you know, whether it's coming into a church or going out of it. I don't quite buy into this whole missional versus attractional distinction. I think they're just complementary sides of the same coin for me, and that's how it happens. And part of what makes it messy, I think, too, has to do with theology, that there can be more than one right answer. I mean, Vision came out of a Wesleyan background, and, you know, there was the Wesleyan quadrilateral, which was scripture, which was the biggest side of it, but also tradition, reason, and personal experience. And that's like a conversation that takes place in those things. And it's a lot messier than just being able to point to an answer. I always say at Vision, we believe truth is an essay question, not a fill-in-the-blank proposition. And yes, it's messy, but it's also worth it because it takes everybody to a whole new relationship, not just with each other, but with Christ as well.
Well, and the part that I really resonate with what you're saying, and the whole, there's so many different expressions. So, and different kinds of churches can have different sizes and shapes and structures and all kinds of things, and be living this out in different ways. I think certain structures make it easier or harder to do together, no question. But I think the bigger question always is, are people really doing it? Are people really engaged in other people's lives in a really tangible way? And can we take out all the measurements about how that, what that really looks like? Because none of it's measurable. So much of what, you know, at least I was taught, is you sort of measured certain things, and those measures were pretty definable. They were in the number of people that showed up, and they were the number of people who got baptized, or the number of people who rededicated their life, or whatever it looked like. They were kind of hard and fast. And this is so much trickier. There's no way to measure it, except for in a person's story and experience, when they say, my life has been changed. Either through love, you know, tangible love that they've felt and experienced through God and through people, or by them going out. And I think it's always both. I never think it's just one or the other. It's like when we are drawn into God's love, always, it's been my experience, people pass it on. When it's really in there, it's contagious. And I think that that's the piece, but none of that is really measurable in a way other than people's real stories. And that's why the stories are so powerful. I mean, I could just sit here all day and just share all these amazing stories of the way that people's lives have been changed, either through someone else's touch or through touching someone else. And they're beautiful, but they're kind of small in lots of ways. They're not all radical. They're not, you know, a complete 180 in one day. They're not a miracle in the sense of the way that a lot of us have been taught miracles, but they're really a miracle. Because people are experiencing something really powerful, and I believe that that's God's spirit at work through people. And so I think that that's the piece that's just different in this conversation, I think, in some of the kind of old, I mean, everyone's aware of this. It's not some new information, but I think we need to keep embracing that this is freaky. This is messy. This isn't as tangible. It's not measurable in the old way.
I think that's one of the reasons why I was drawn to the missional conversation, per se, is because it moved beyond the traditional conversion process as a marker point. Because for me, conversion is sort of the beginning point where I declare I'm willing to follow Jesus. And the reality is that there is going to be moments where I want to turn back, and will turn back even. You know, Peter turned away, and we have those moments where do we have a community around us reminding us that, no, there's still grace that transcends even our darkest hour. And we need those reminders that it's not the moment I began the journey, it's the moment that I'm living in the journey right now, because that's all I have. You know, I think that was the why I think missional and attractional complement each other. We need a marker point to say, I'm beginning this process in my life. But we also need to be reminded that that's a continual process into the dark spaces to be transformed. I want to just open it up to comments in terms of, there's a lot of people talk about missional as this idea of simply shifting over to a mainline focus on social justice. And what arises is almost a stereotype that missional is simply about social justice and not much else. How would you guys respond to that?
Yeah, I was just going to say, a vision emerged from a mainline background. And in a mainline church, you can kind of OD on social justice issues, almost the sense of, are we ever going to talk about Jesus? And but coming from the background that we did, I think, again, that Wesleyan heritage, I mean, yes, was a lot about social holiness and social justice, but it was all also about, you know, personal holiness. And so those two are complementary. Now, a lot of people that we meet in missional and emerging churches kind of OD'd on the other end, the evangelical side. And but I see it more where we keep saying it's holistic. It's a both and. It's both of them. You know, part, even though for some of us we may recoil at this word, I think part of being of what the mission is evangelism. But that evangelism is, I don't think, for me, doesn't look like saying, do you know where you would go if you died tonight? It's about something much broader and even more life-changing than that. And it's not about a particular moment. It's about following Jesus, which means you're going somewhere, which means it is a journey, and it's going to develop and take you somewhere. You know, I just say briefly, I think even the advertising we do at Vision is missional, because we do these sort of irreverent ads. And someone said to me once, what you're really doing is you're screwing around with people's heads who see that ad and it gets them to rethink what it means to be in a community, what church is, what God's about. And that's distinctly missional, because you're really disturbing people's cultural attitudes and creating a change.
I completely agree with you, Don. I was on the other spectrum, being the evangelical, that, you know, we didn't give a crap about the earth. We didn't give a crap about anybody else. It was all about, you know, finding, you know, dying and going to heaven. And we just really didn't ever talk about social justice issues. And you have that tendency when you come from that end to want to jump on the other end, and then Jesus just becomes this whole academic kind of Jesus seminar guy, and you kind of put him back into the textbooks of seminaries and, you know, in this idea in your head, and then you go and do these things. You either create programs that are feeding the poor, which I think are great, and, you know, are fighting human trafficking, which I also think is great, and all these things. But there's this tension that I think we have to live in, where the personal Jesus becomes so radical that it produces this idea or this movement that we need to do these things, that we need to be involved in our community. You know, here in Fort Worth, it may look completely different what it looks like in Denver, what needs to happen. But to say that missional is only social justice, I mean, I could see that critique, yeah. I really do. I think because I'll just say it, some of the people who have become our poster children make that seem like that's what we are. And I just don't think that's fair for the context in which each of us are living. But the people who see us on a national level, they don't like this idea. They want to lump us in this uniformed idea instead of allowing us to be unified. They want to see us as this entire blanket. Oh, you're missional, you're emergent, you do this, and, you know, your thing is social justice, and you're just a new way of looking at mainline Christianity, and I don't want to have anything to do with you. And I just don't think that's fair to us, because, you know, missional is more than just social justice, at least for us at the U Catastrophe it is.
I would agree with you. I don't think that's a fair assessment of what we do either, because, you know, I think that, you know, missional with a capital M, where, you know, when we do those things, where we collect money for a big cause, or we gather together to do an art show or a music performance to raise money for a well in Africa and things like that, we do those things. And I have to say, and we do them because, you know, of our conviction of being followers of Jesus Christ, but those things seem almost easy to us. As a community, the challenge for us as a community is I think it was Kathy who said that, you know, we're broken, and we're broken individuals. And when you know, 100 or 200 broken individuals get together and we say, well, now we're going to really act like a community. We're not going to come together on Sunday and then go away and do our own thing, and then come back together next Sunday and just say hi, you know, and dress nice, and everybody look like everything's okay in their lives. We don't do that, and that's a harder task, I think. And to me, that's missional.
Our church is in a pretty wealthy community, but what we find is that people who have bought into the culture, like these big houses and all that stuff, you know, 10 or 15 years down the road say, well, you know what, I'm strapped to this house. This house has more of a direction in my life than my belief in Jesus does. It keeps me from doing the things I want to do. And that to me is a huge missional component of what we do, because people really need to transform. They really want to transform when the alternative is given to them, you know, and the different ways of looking at how you want to live out your life.
That was good stuff. I think that there's a little piece of me that goes, you know, I'm not going to argue that back. I can see why people think that, but it's kind of like, I don't know what to say. All of us are saying the same thing, that we are passionate about a very holistic gospel. And social justice is a piece, and community is a piece, and personal connection with God is a piece, and we can line up all kinds of different pieces. And so at the same time, you know, I don't think it's a bad thing to be known for, because I think that this world is crying out for who's going to care about us, who's going to use their voice on our behalf, who's going to help, who's going to bring hope. And God's spirit is alive and well through people who are willing to go to those really hard places and advocate and love and be present and be tangible, God's presence tangibly in their life. And so, you know, it's a little bit like AA to me, in that lots of people diss AA, Alcoholics Anonymous, and 12-step kinds of things. Go, oh, they just sit around and talk about their problems all the time. Well, the truth is that amazing things, lives are being saved through AA. And so it's kind of like, well, you don't have to understand it. Just we kind of trust that it's happening. And I kind of feel that way a little bit about the whole missional thing, is that, you know, there's all kinds of different opinions and theologies, and everyone wants to kind of pin things down and define it and make it a little bit more clear than I think it really needs to be. The truth is we know beautiful things are happening through some of these missional communities, these pockets of people that are dedicated to living out the ways of Jesus, and they're powerful, and it's happening. And we don't have to parse it all out and go, maybe they're a little too heavy on this or a little too light on this. You know, to me, it's a little bit, you know, it doesn't matter. All I know, I was blind, and now I can see.
I think a lot of people, when we have this conversation, they think it just has to do with poor people. To be a holistic missional conversation, at least in my opinion, it has to be for everybody. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times we end up marginalizing one set of people by focusing completely on another.
The reality is Jesus continued to go to the poor. And there was something inherent about what he was doing, I think, that was transcendent, because if we spend our lives climbing the social ladder, I live in a very similar community, we end up finding that house does not define us, nor does it validate us. And last night, a group of us went and served with an Episcopal church and served the homeless. And I said to the woman serving, I said, you know what, I cannot help but find Jesus in these people, because they are struck with the reality of life, and they cannot hide it. And what the big mansions or the big houses or even the wealth of the cars do is they allow us to hide. And I think part of the social justice component is, to me, one of the healthiest and most restorative components, because it continually brings us down to life and reality, that it reminds us, this man sitting next to me last night who I'm eating dinner with, who has no job and no home, reminds me that I am broken, and I don't like that. But in living in that tension of that space, I can then also be reminded of our dignity, and that both of us are children of God. I can begin to see Jesus in him. And that's a restorative process that I think, unfortunately, people avoid. So so the tension of the whole stereotype of social justice, I think, misses out on why Jesus called us to the poor. And in many ways, it's defined our own humanity.
Well, I was just going to add one thing. I really love what you all shared related to that. And Jonathan, you know, kind of a big thing, and we hear a little bit about it here and there, but I think there's some really good pieces that have been written. One of them that comes to mind is by, I think it's Claudio Olivier, I don't know how to say his last name, but he said, "Why I Stopped Serving the Poor." Mm-hmm. And it was a really powerful article, and really this idea that there's no us and them, there's just us.
Yeah.
And I think that that's a big piece that is in danger, really, in the missional conversation. If it's kind of like, we've got it and we need to bring it, really, we all need it. We all need it. And that
the
there's not
is
this
that you
divide.
You go into those spaces and think you're rescuing them. And
right.
We're not.
No.
We're rescuing
just the
our
opposite,
heart.
Usually. And I think this is definitely related to all of that as well, is we live in this wider cultural context, this American context, that pits us versus them. My opinion is greater than yours.
Mm-hmm.
My views are greater than yours. And it's perpetuated all around. And we don't know how to talk and listen to one another. We don't know how to open our hearts and share our hearts and be present with one another. We have no idea how to disagree and still be community at table together, sharing a meal together. We need to have room at the table for conversation, for disagreement, this whole sense of being unified versus uniformed. So many of us came out of different faith traditions that demanded uniformity. And to us, we're learning this wonderful beauty of unity in great and grand difference. And particularly for us at the UK, we focused, and we have to continue to focus. But at the very beginning, we spent almost the first year learning how to talk to one another, disagree, and still be at table together. And to me, that's the beauty of Jesus broken so that we could be made whole, his blood shed that we could live, this sense that he had everyone at his table, including the one who would betray him, and all were welcomed there. To me, that's that sense of learning to be at table together, to be in disagreement, and to be radically in disagreement, and still have a Savior that welcomes us.
I think that's a huge part of being missional, is creating that safe space where there can be that diversity, because the alternative is just, well, if you have position A on an issue and you have position B, you just pick two different churches and you never speak to each other. And there's no growth and there's no enlightenment. I think in our community, one of the most, where I've seen God the most is in people who you would never expect to be friends become friends even though they disagree, and what they come together on is really their following of Jesus. And some things they're just willing to put aside and say, this is important for me to follow Jesus, and it's important to you, so let's meet on the meaning of the scripture and not the debate about these individual points, and let's journey together.
I want to thank you for joining us on the Transform Network Roundtable. If you'd like to continue these types of conversations, join us April 30th through May 2nd at the first Transform East Coast Gathering. It's a free conference, but you have to register. I'm your host, Jonathan Brink, and it has been my pleasure.